Hello and welcome to Altered Geek Unlimited, episode 91. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and joining me this week are...
I guess I'll go first. Michael Powers.
And Mike the Birdman Dodd. Hello.
Hello.
It's a Steve sandwich.
No.
How the hell is everybody?
I'm great.
I am pumped up like a hamster on coffee right now. We usually record this very late on Thursday nights. Most people are getting ready for bed. I'm getting ready to stay up all night. Just recently watched this. There's this Kickstarter-backed movie. It's free on YouTube right now. Kung Fury. It's a ninja going back in time to fight Hitler with dinosaurs. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's the most amazing thing you'll ever see. With David Hasselhoff doing the like theme song. I have literally seen the greatest accomplishment that mankind will ever do. Everything else now is just great. That's how I am.
Me personally, I've spent the last week working with, well, you guys all know them as the Off the Cuff Crew, but I've been working with them on launching a new podcast that more or less went live this afternoon if people were smart enough to figure out how to find it. But it's the Geek Stuff Garage Cast, going for a little synergy with Joe Reed's Geek Garage Sale. So that's actually now available. It wasn't supposed to be available till tomorrow, but we decided just to let it go crazy.
You said you can do it. And then I've been working on stuff for my class, the cinematography class, the Rise of Superheroes class online. This week we get to create our villain. It's interesting. I'll release pictures later this week of some of my hero villain combinations that I've made for the class. The cinematography class, we had to write a paper on the Hollywood master paper. It was basically you had to choose like a art director or casting director or somebody. I wrote mine on a voice casting director, Andrea Romano. So it was real easy for me. I was one of the few that got 100% on the paper. So,
woo!
Yeah,
good old American grading system.
Yes. Well, it helps if you're very knowledgeable on the person you're writing about. And a lot of people weren't very knowledgeable on the people they were writing about. So
I think if I can name any casting directors, maybe a few art directors I could name, but...
I know of her, but that's because of the fact that...
the DCU stuff?
Yes.
It's like she's done everything like every you've watched. Ever.
She's done everything that Warner Brothers has produced in basically the last 30 years.
Oh.
I could maybe... I'm trying to think... I know she produces now.
She's won like 8 daytime Emmys and been nominated for 22 other ones. So,
so I'm guessing your paper was fairly in depth. I'm just...
it had to be 800 words. I think I hit 1,000, and I was like, okay,
you overachiever, you.
Yeah, I think that was with the citing my sources at the end too. And then, of course, I was using all of our friends' sites, like, behind the voice actors and shit like that. So it was like, I didn't have to do any research.
Sometimes it's great when stuff like that happens. Like, when I was in college, we had to write our, like, thesis. We had to write, like, 25 to 45 pages in year 3 about a specific topic. One of the guys I work with, David Dennis, did his thing on voice actors. So whenever we did an interview... Basically, any interview that we did for the site, we just took certain questions out and used the audio for his actual project. And I did mine on podcasting. I'm like, I can write this in my fucking sleep. So, yeah, we just used the resources we had at hand. Everybody else was scrambling. Like, they left all their interviews to, like, the last minute. And you had to have your paper in. It had to be bound and stapled a very specific way. Like, you had to send it to, like, Staples or Kinko's or something. If you didn't, you lost, like, 30%. Something fucking stupid like that.
Wow.
Yeah. I was not happy with that college grading system. But yeah, we took advantage of every possible resource, and I don't know, it's kind of nice to have that advantage, because for once, you can be smug, because you were prepared.
It's so great.
It's because you're like, fuck you guys.
So yeah, other than that, just been working on some stuff on the site and changing some things around just out of boredom. But yeah.
Another thing that I've been working on, one of the shows I work on is Terrible Warriors, which is a role-playing podcast, kind of like tabletop and the like. I've been working on a Mass Effect-based RPG, so I've been playing through the trilogy over the last week and a half. I'm 3/4 of the way through Mass Effect 3. I'm ridiculously powerful. I'm playing a female soldier, Stephanie Shepard. And I found a system online which is sort of like Call of Cthulhu-esque, where it's a base 40 system. Basically, you have a 4 in 10 chance of doing anything on screen, but if you add skill points to that, so you just have to roll under it. So rolling 100 is very fucking bad, but rolling a 1 is you're amazingly awesome. So I'm going through that, developing it. I didn't realize how deep and how interconnected most of the Mass Effect lore is. I kind of wish when I met the writing team at PAX East back in 2012, I'd had more to say then, because now I'm like, holy shit, that connects to here, 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 and here. So I'm hoping for E3 in about 2 weeks that we get a release date for Mass Effect 4. That would make me ever so happy. It's not coming out this year. I'm so betting it's not.
But no, we'll it'll be
a trailer or something.
It'll be, well, they'll show something because they teased something last year.
Yeah.
But I think you'll get the definitive edition of Mass Effect this year.
Ugh, I hope so, because then again, I really hope if they do the definitive and it's HD upgraded and everything, I hope they do pack in all of the DLC for it, like Bring Down the Sky from Mass Effect 1, Project Overlord, Shadow Broker from Mass Effect 2. All the DLC for Mass Effect 3.
I don't see any reason for them not to do that.
Yeah, for Mass Effect 3, there was so much DLC. There was From Ashes, there was Citadel, Leviathan. I'm trying to think of what else am I missing here.
I think EA and BioWare would take a crap storm if they didn't put all the DLC in there.
I'd be really curious if they'd still leave in the multiplayer component. That again, the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer community was so much fun to be a part of way back in the day. Like, I used to play that religiously for, like, a year. I spent way too much money on Spectre packs. Thankfully, a lot of it was Microsoft donated, so I'm not bitching. But speaking of video games, gotta look at Arkham Knight this week, the first 7 minutes or something.
It wasn't the first 7 minutes, but it was 7 minutes.
It's a gameplay or something, yeah. I'm excited for it. I got it for Xbox One, though, so I don't get the exclusive PlayStation 4 content.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Because I can get the special edition, mostly. Because getting the special edition for PS4, I would have had to pre-order the day of. And I just wasn't around a computer on that day. So I got lucky I even got this one. I got the Batmobile version.
Oh.
So I'm pretty hyped for that. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to paying the $40 season's pass, which is kind of weird that with the special edition they wouldn't include that.
No, it's not.
It's just kind of crap that they...
Call of Duty does it.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of crap that they even promoted it before the games actually come out.
Well, that's what happens. That's one of the things I have against... I hate when... I immediately lose interest in almost any game when DLC or season passes are announced before the game even comes out. Like, if they were to wait until... I don't care what's included. I feel like let the game release and then... Because you always get that... Everyone gets that backlash, which is, why isn't this in the game? Why aren't you including this? Now I'm only getting half a game for my $60. Like, I don't understand why they can't figure this out. Like, if you want good press up to your launch, then don't announce anything until your launch. Like,
well, stuff like that, sometimes having a season's pass announced trailer will boost pre-order sales. Plus, sometimes if you pre-order the season's pass, you get extra content anyway.
I've never seen a positive reaction to a DLC announcement before a game's come out.
No, I really... Mortal Kombat X, I could say. Because people were hyped to play as Jason and the Predator. That was fairly positive. DLC,
were those pre-order bonuses or DLC?
Those are DLC included in the season's pass. For Call of Duty, a lot of people get hyped for Zombies, which is only available if you have the season's pass or you purchase the individual map packs. But if you buy season's pass, you get additional weapons, such as, I think it's the Ohm energy weapon and the AE for the laser assault rifle, either way.
But see, the Call of Duty one is really annoying because that game type was available in other games for free, and now it's like, well, people really like this, so let's charge them for it. That way we just get their season pass money anyways.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Like, that's just malicious, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, when I bought my Call of Duty Special Edition this year, I bought it mostly because I wanted the Uber Edition, had all the extra crap. Well, I'm going to get the season pass anyway. So I thought it was I think I saved maybe $15-$20 when I broke it down. But, yeah, I could see how that could, like, piss people off a fair chunk.
Borderlands 2 ruined season passes for me. I had never gotten a season pass before at all for any game. I thought they were like the dumbest thing in the world, but Borderlands 2 was on the horizon and they announced a season pass. And I know that I bought all of the DLC for, you know, the first Borderlands. And I loved all of it. So I was like, hey, why not? It's going to be, you know, same caliber stuff. And no, it wasn't. The DLC for Borderlands 2 was like three quarters of that DLC was pure bullcrap. And I was like, I felt burned, and I will never buy a season pass again for any game whatsoever.
By Destiny's?
Now, nope, I didn't buy Destiny's.
Wow, that surprises me, because I know you were all, like, hardcore for that. I figured you would have got House of Wolves, and forget what the other one was called.
Nope, and I'm glad I didn't, because I was irritated with that game after 2 weeks.
Destiny? Who am I thinking of who was all hardcore Destiny? Was that you?
It was me for like the first 2 weeks. And then I was like, nope, there's nothing here. Like, wow. I love Destiny. I like the gameplay mechanics in it were solid. Like, that was a really good shooter. It felt really good to play that game. But 2 weeks after, and I had finished like everything that was like there in the main game outside of like just, you know, doing deathmatch or like grinding for
Western
materials.
Or whatever, yeah.
I was like, nope, done. I was, and then all the negative reaction to people dissecting the video journals that Bungie had put out for that game, that, you know, content that they said was going to be there, and then stuff that was changed like down the road, and I was like, you know what, this is not the game I signed up for, and I was like super glad that I did not buy the season pass. So
I've downloaded it, but I haven't played it, which that's another thing, too. I hate it when I get a season pass for a game, like, and I don't use the content. I think for Far Cry 4, I'm the same way. I got everything downloaded, just haven't fucking played it. Or, actually, one thing I could think of, one DLC pass that almost consistently pisses me off, is the WWE stuff. 2K15, it's not a great game by any stretch of the imagination, but this year it just seemed really lackluster in what they're offering for like DLC, and considering what you got in the season's pass, yet you still had to buy certain things like the NXT roster or stuff like that, I'm just thinking that's not cool, 2K games. I'm not happy with you in this regard.
See, I think I've just decided to start treating DLC as like me giving the developer a pat on the back. Like, if I buy your game for $60 and I had a lot of fun playing it, and you release a piece of DLC that might give me more to do in that world, sure, if I don't have another game that I'm playing on the horizon, I will give you, you know, $10, $15, whatever you're asking for that DLC. Like, going back to bringing this back around to Arkham Knight, one of the DLC things that I'm looking forward to, but not enough for me to buy the season pass, is the Batgirl DLC.
I'm trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to pay for this, because my edition, I think, alone is like $130-140. And with another $40 on top of that?
Figure this. You're going to pay the $60 when it comes out. You know, most people will anyway. And then there's the $40 season pass. And then you figure shortly, at some point, there's going to be an expansion that's not included in that.
Well, that's...
That they're going to
peg you
for again. But my whole thing with it is, like, one, I'm not buying a new console to play it, so I'm going to have to play it on my PC. So that's one strike against the game for me. Two, I'm not going to buy all that crap bundled, like, pay the price separately and risk spending $100 to $130 for this game, that some of this crap could have been included in the game for the $60. And at the same time, if I wait a year and a half, I can get the entire game with all of the stuff included in a Game of the Year edition for like $20-30.
See, that one I agree with, but like, and I don't want to make it, I don't
I'm
want the listeners to think.
So I can't.
I'm impatient too, and I love the Arkham series. The only problem I have is the amount of money that they want for it.
Because it's insane.
Like, I could justify the 60 if it came with the season pass already included in that 60, but if. Otherwise I would wait until Black Friday and buy the game for half off.
Which it'll be half off this year.
Which it'll be half off.
Some kind of a digital sale on the season's pass too.
I want to just clarify for the listeners, so we don't get like slammed here, that we're not naive to the way that video games work. After a certain point, the main game is feature complete, and so other teams, smaller teams, go and work on this DLC stuff to be, you know, as extra stuff to be completed after said game. And that goes back to what I said, like, wait until the game's released to announce this stuff. Then people don't think it's content that was deliberately cut to, you know, ask for your kidney. But that's what you guys were saying about being impatient and whatnot. For me, it's not so much about being impatient. It's about, I've noticed I have this trend that if I don't play a game while it's in the news cycle, I probably won't play it.
I find it hard to go back to older games too sometimes.
Yep.
Because like, I was 3/4 of the way through Borderlands 2, and then I want to say Mass Effect 3 came out or something, and I just like, don't care anymore.
Well, I just noticed, like, if it's, you know, I listened to several video game podcasts, and I was not planning on picking, like, for example, I wasn't planning on picking up Diablo 3 on my PS4, but because I already had it on the PS3 and I had already bought it on the PC, and I was like, it's okay. But then I get swept up into, not necessarily I don't get swept up into like YouTube video hype or like video, like gameplay videos or anything like that. I get hyped up by like podcasts and listening to people's general physical reaction to like a game, and how excited they are for it. I'm like, man, this is really making me feel like I'm missing out on something. And no article or YouTube video has ever done that. It's usually like podcasts with hosts that I've been listening to for like a decade. But if I don't play a game while they're talking about it, while I might buy the game at a later date, I probably won't play it if no one's talking about it. So I guess that could be considered the...
It's the lore that has to grab me. Like, right now, I'm trying to get into the Dragon Age series because of Mass Effect, because I want to unlock an armor for Mass Effect 2 that I have to get a save file from Dragon Age 1 and 2 to unlock the Blood Dragon armor or something. And I heard good things about the series. A lot of people really liked Dragon Age Inquisition. So I'm very curious to see what people are talking about, seeing if it's this epic fantasy world, because fantasy games typically don't interest me. Until I played Skyrim, I was a complete fantasy virgin. Like, I hated Diablo and most kind of dungeon crawlers. But Skyrim made my wife a widow for about a year and change. That's all I played. I can agree with you. Like, something has to grab you to get me interested. And, for example, like, even this year, Titanfall, I think I got roped into that one because I think I just like the idea of mechs even though there's fucking zero story in that game, which really sucks, because the lore could be interesting. And I think I got into Modern Warfare this year, Call of Duty, which I'm normally not a Call of Duty guy, yet I keep buying it every year. I know, let's figure that one out later. Because it shared elements with Titanfall with 3D movement. I actually don't listen to any hype about anything, and I work in the video game industry. Like, right now I'm reviewing Splatoon, which comes out today. I knew nothing going into it. I know next to nothing going into Batman. It takes a lot for me to look into games to actually kind of give a shit about them.
Well, like, I don't want to say, like, it's not necessarily, like I said, it's the podcast I listen to, which I don't necessarily consider the podcast I listen to, like, jumping on the hype train. Like, articles and stuff like that, YouTube, like, none of that does anything to drive hype for me. Like, I can read that stuff and be like, okay, whatever, we'll wait and see what it is when it comes out. But when I'm listening to a podcast I listened to for 10 years, it's a little bit different. So,
yeah, I like YouTube series to some degree, but, like, I don't, I just don't care. It kind of depends on where the stuff's coming from.
Yeah, like, I feel like I can trust the people that I listen to. I mean, a lot of them are ex-EGM, Electronic Game Monthly, 1UP guys that, like I said, I've just been listening to for 10, 11 years. So, I feel like, I've never met them. I've interacted with some of them on Twitter and stuff like that, so I feel like I know them. So, like, when they, you know, say that, like, they're having a lot of fun playing a game, I'm like, maybe I should check it out. I think it's just, like, getting sucked into a friend's enthusiasm is what it is. For something. But yeah, the whole Arkham thing, I'm excited for the Batgirl DLC, which I'll probably end up buying separately. I have my usual nitpicks about the game, with an additional, like, I don't care for the Batmobile. I don't care for what is at the, where you can switch between, like, Batman and another character, the tag team stuff.
Yeah, Batman or like Nightwing or
Robin.
Yeah,
like I don't Red care. Robin. Yeah, I don't care for that. I don't care for the Batmobile. I don't, as usual, anyone that's listening to this will probably know, I still don't care for Kevin Conroy as this Batman. I know that sparked a debate when we first talked about when we were talking about Arkham Origin on this podcast a long time ago. And another small little nitpick I have is the cape. I was kind of, like, long shot. I was really hoping for a game that didn't have clipping with the cape. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of sent me into a whirlwind the other day was the somebody going, they got a Batman Beyond skin. And I'm like, that's not Batman Beyond.
That was Mike.
I was like, it's not Batman Beyond. It's far from it. It's like an armored, you know, Batman suit with the Batman Beyond logo.
Well, I think you're right. It's the Arkham Knight. It's the Arkham Knight model, because you can even see the old Bat logo on the chest plate underneath the red one.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel like that's Rocksteady's take on the Batman Beyond. But that picture that was posted, he looks more like a Sith Lord.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like a mat. It doesn't look like he has a cowl. It looks like he has, like, the lower face thing on and then real pale skin, like ash-colored skin. So. But I'm looking forward to it. My wife, I'm probably going to end up buying it. I mean, I've still got it in my pre-order thing on Amazon. And my wife is playing the Arkham games, and she's having a lot of fun with them, so it'll end up in the house. The question is, will I actually play it? And I probably will. Who am I kidding?
Yeah.
I need something to play.
I guess switching gears from that, have you watched the Supergirl pilot?
I did. I was pleasantly surprised, but I feel like I got exactly what I expected out of it. There's two things. The only negative thing I have really to say about it is I hate the final version of her cape. I don't know if you notice how it like kind of evolved throughout the course of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like I liked the second to last one, which was just, you know, a red Superman-esque cape. The final cape, which is, you know, spoilers for anyone that hasn't seen it yet, comes about after she receives a gift from Superman. They end up putting like this lace frill across the shoulders for the final cape. And I was like, that's completely unnecessary. You didn't have to make her look more girly. As bad as that might make me sound.
Yeah, I think she was sufficient anyway.
Yeah, like I was like really, I was like pleased with the outfit. Like I was like, yeah, this is Supergirl. And now, and then the last one was like, wow, this is Supergirl. but what I'm interested to see is because it was quote unquote leaked so early. I'm interested to see the actual aired pilot. To see if they made any changes, like any casting changes or character tweaks. Stuff like that I always find fascinating. And it does happen because one of the... since I started religiously watching TV, one of the biggest ones to me was... I don't know if anyone remembers Bionic Woman back in 2008.
Yeah.
When NBC rebooted that. The leaked pilot had a completely different actress playing the main character's sister, with a completely different, she had a deficiency or a handicap, if you will. I think she was deaf. But the actual aired pilot, that was actually episode number one, they redid all of that character's scenes with a different actress, and she did not have the handicap. So they made her a completely different character. So I'm interested to see if anything like that happens here. Plus, anyone who watches TV regularly knows that the pilot isn't what matters. It's the second episode that matters.
That is true.
I'd be very curious to see what's going to be presented at Comic-Con this year. Because I'm almost 99% sure this was done, obviously, to gauge reaction, to basically see what the community thinks before they get too far invested. And the fact that it was leaked on a long weekend also heavily suggests that. I mean, if I was CBS, I would have done the exact same thing.
Because what better way to market test your show than to release it for free?
Exactly. I mean, this way you get people talking about it. You get every entertainment blogger, YouTuber, and radio station talking about it. So... although the response to it seems to have been pretty good so far. I haven't seen it yet. I just haven't bothered to download it.
I'm going to be bummed if it doesn't cross over with the other stuff.
I hope they find a way to work together.
I mean, at least with Flash, because it felt very flashy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the same universe.
Well, it's got that same kind of vibe where it feels less... it's not Arrow. It's not dark. It's got a certain, a happy charm to it, I guess, would be how I would describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, something like, sorely lacking from a lot of superhero shows.
Like the hero that likes being a hero, or likes their powers. Like, I like
one who flashes a smile and you genuinely believe it.
Like, Arrow, like, Ollie always seems like it's a burden for him to be a superhero, whereas Flash is excited that he can do what he can do, and Supergirl, same thing.
Yeah. So, it's hopefully, refreshing. I really hope it succeeds. I'd be very curious to see how they're going to handle her rogues gallery, like, who they're going to include. I know Hank Henshaw is the villain of the first episode. It would be so cool if he turns into the cyborg Superman at some point.
But he's not the villain.
Isn't he?
No, not in the first episode.
Well, he'll become a villain at some point.
Hopefully.
If they stick with the continuity.
If there's one thing I don't know, if there's one thing about the series is I don't know enough about the character to know her rogues gallery. So, like, if it's not, like, a blatantly obvious DC character, I'm not going to be able to pick it out. But that doesn't really bother me. What bothers me is that there, for the first outing, it looks like she was fighting Klingons.
You mean the Blingons?
I didn't know what was... I was like, wait a minute. So CBS is really toying around with putting Star Trek back on the air, huh?
Well, you gotta get some extra mileage out of those props.
I mean, they were like a Batleth away. I mean, they had a substitute for a Batleth.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, that's come on. So
I'm trying to think who the hell would be in a rogues gallery. Like, see, I can name a bunch of Superman villains, but I can't name any for her. And that's the thing, though, because she's... Actually, no, I was about to say you could... I guess that's how Smallville got around that issue. They weren't their big bad versions of themselves kind of later on. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who they drag in.
Yeah, I'm not familiar enough with her. Like, most of my DC knowledge comes from the animated stuff.
Yeah, same here.
Because I can't read their comics for anything. I really can't.
I think it's funny that they managed to douche out the New 52 with their convergence event that basically resets it to pre-New 52 and
pre-Infinite Crisis.
Yes.
Like, didn't we get some kind of hate from DC when you did something with them and we did an Altered Geek or something and we blasted the New 52 saying it was just going to be undone? Do you remember this?
Yeah, basically.
And DC themselves came after you?
Yeah, it was... Geekcast Radio was doing a promotion with their comics or something?
Yeah, I think so. And I said, give it 3 years, they'll reboot.
And DC didn't... I don't know. I guess...
They didn't disappoint. 3 years.
DC PR is hot and cold to deal with anyway, so I wouldn't take it personally.
Oh, we didn't.
Like, I've dealt with them over the years, and sometimes I'll get a really good response, and I'll get a lot of support. Other times, I won't hear a peep.
Yeah, that's kind of how some of it is. Like, I'm pretty well able to get, like, responses for like, the digital media that I need. But some of the comic side of things is a little dry,
you could say. People that I work with a lot, they're really good to me. It's Dynamite. Like, they're so good to people. Like, because I read Pathfinder, which is based upon the role-playing game. And, yeah, like every single week without clockwork, or sorry, like clockwork, here's all the new comics coming out this week. Here's all the DLC links that you need. If you need any additional art or interviews, just give us a call. I love it when comic companies are that accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Devil's Due Publishing being really good a couple years ago with Hack Slash as well.
But, all right, moving on. anybody excited for the new Doom game that's supposed to be coming out?
Yes and no. I love Doom.
Or do we even care?
I want to know more about it before I get excited.
Because, like, I liked the old Doom games, but I don't know if it's still relevant enough to, return to.
See, that's the thing, though. Like, I liked Doom 1 and 2 way back in the day. Doom 3 felt like it tried too hard.
It can't be any more or less relevant than Wolfenstein.
That's true.
Yeah.
And look how well that's doing right now, so...
Although the DLC for that game sucks. The old
one. Maybe the game sucks too, though.
No, the actual game. Good. The new one, like really good. Yeah. Actually, I've only watched my friend play that, but the vibe I got off of it was finally someone made a first person Captain America game.
Yeah, I could say it. Yeah.
It's pretty much what it is.
It's more narrative than I expected, and that's really good. It's fun. It's genuinely really fun.
So,
I mean, like, what can Doom 4 really do? I mean, Doom, it doesn't have a super deep lore. And when they tried to do it in 3, it felt, like I said, once again, really forced.
No, I was going to say, but I mean, I'm pretty sure you could give it something.
Yeah. Well, the new one looks like it's got, like they actually have an idea of what the hell they're trying to do this time. I was not a fan of 3, but again, I'm a fan of the original games, but I don't know. I'll give it a shot.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was about to say, one thing for Doom is there's one piece of lore that existed in the 90s, and it was really interesting. They had a series of 4 novels, which did Doom lore. They did Doom 1, Doom 2, and then 3 and 4 sort of went off in their own direction, where it got really fucking weird, I'll tell you that much. But I'd like to, if Doom 4 happens on Earth, if they try and adapt Doom 2 Hell on Earth, that'd be interesting to me. Like, because we fought on Phobos and Deimos for so long. Because we had that with Doom 3, Doom 3 Resurrection of Evil. So, I don't know. I'd like to see a different setting for it. I just don't know how much more narrative stuff they could add to it. Because at the heart, Doom's always been about ultra-violence. And not necessarily... Basically, I don't think they could pull Alien Isolation, but with Doom. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Well, it's it. I don't think they would want to. Plus, Doom is also known just for being a straight-up shooter.
Yeah. I'd like to see a really interesting competitive multiplayer with it, but...
Yeah. If I want to play something like that, I'll play Unreal Tournament. The new one of that. But... All right. Actually, I guess the last thing we'll just...
What's that? I was about to say, since we're kind of talking about games here, any early predictions for E3?
Oh, we just did a off-the-cuff E3 prediction episode. Fallout 4?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't follow. I wait for information to come out.
I mean,
my guess there is Nintendo's going to announce something big. I've got a fairly reliable source on this.
Metroid?
The new console.
No, they're not talking about
that.
It
won't be a new console. I think it'll be a brand new IP.
Oh, God.
And it may be something we don't expect, but I think we're going to get fairly excited. I think we'll get a concrete release on Star Fox.
Well, that's got to be this fall, otherwise they have nothing.
It'll be this fall. It'll definitely be playable on the show floor. That's what I'm predicting. I think you might see something Metroid.
I'm really hoping... What I really want to see is Retro Studios take on Metroid again with the zombie U mechanics.
Yes! Oh my god, that'd be so cool.
For scanning? Yes, it'd be amazing. But Star Fox, I'm a big Star Fox fan. I'm just really worried because what they showed last year, which was you control the R-Wing with the... like. With an in-cockpit view in the controller. And I'm not a big fan of that. For me to pick that game up, it's really going to come down to, can I just play it like a classic Star Fox game?
Yeah.
And if I can't, I probably won't pick it up.
See, I'd be okay with having that mechanic in certain sections. But yeah, for the vast majority, I want to be able to play with a pro controller. Or play with just the pad without having to look down at it all the time.
Exactly. Or even if the pad just showed you, like, maybe it was like the radar of the battlefield.
Or maybe like you're like instruments or something.
Yeah, something like, I mean, just not like, don't make me look at that to fly, like, because some of us, you know, we all have really nice TVs and I don't want to look at my gamepad the entire time.
Yeah, like, for one example, Nintendo, they just did this with Splatoon, and this really pissed me off because I think the game is fun, but I hate controlling it. You have to use the pad. The only way you can use a pro controller is if you're playing multiplayer. And that's such a pain in the ass. I really wish Nintendo would move away from gimmicky control.
Is it because they have you use the touchscreen?
Not really. You have to do it. I'm trying to remember how do you fucking describe this?
But why would they, if you don't have to use the touch screen, why would they not allow you to use the Pro Controller?
I think it's just because they want more games to actually utilize it. I mean, when you look at all the games on the Wii U, very few actually utilize the second or use the pad right. I can think of two games that did it fairly decently, but they were very early launch. Zombie U was one of them, and Splinter Cell Blacklist. You could control the drone, that little helicopter thing, with the D-pad, and it felt really cool.
My understanding is the issue with the control with utilizing the controller that people are running into is that Nintendo also makes it a requirement to have off-screen play. So even their own Nintendo's guilty of this too. Like Mario Kart 8, the touchscreen is a horn. Like, why is it not the map?
Yeah, that's a fucking waste. That's the thing. I've never played that game with the pad. I only ever play it with.
It's a horn. But the other thing that it does is it just duplicates what you're seeing on screen. So it's like you're doing off screen play. But if you touch the screen, you beep your horn. Like, well, if you're just going to repeat what's on the screen, why don't you just make it the map? I don't know. Like, Nintendo's guilty of not using that controller themselves, so.
Yeah, like, if you're going to have a gimmicky control scheme, at least have it make sense. Like, for example, there's one game they did a couple years ago, and it was a great game for the Wii. Zelda Skyward Sword. Great game. Fuck you, waggle controls. And I love being able to swing my sword, but my arm gets tired after about 10, 15 minutes. I'd much rather play that game with the GameCube controller, if I have the option, or even the Pro Controller. I don't know. Other predictions? Yeah, we're going to see Fallout 4, or at least something fairly significant.
Well, yeah, because they have their own conference.
Mass Effect 4, you'll see something pretty big. I think there'll be a surprise for Halo. Oh, that reminds me. I think, honestly, today's the 29th. We get the Halo Master Chief Collection ODST today, if I'm not mistaken.
Are they going to announce a workable version of the Master Chief Collection?
I would hope so. My God. Although, you know what would be really great? If they announced you can download Reach into it for, like, $10. And actually, it'll make everything work. They're going to do Gears. I know they did the first game. I hope it's 1 through Judgment for that. Because I'm trying to think of what else I'd like to see out of them. Like, I know they're doing Battletoads.
Crackdown.
Yeah, Crackdown, which I never got the point of those.
I love Crackdown. That right there is probably the only reason my Xbox One is still in my house. So.
Low for me. I'm looking forward to Halo 5 this year. Obviously, we'll get more. Hopefully, they'll show off the Legendary Edition at E3. See what the statue looks like that you're supposed
Out of everything going on at E3, the one manufacturer we couldn't really come up with any type of a prediction for was Sony. Because
I think you'll see something for the Vita, but it's going to be so small as to who gives a fuck.
But I don't even care. But I couldn't even think of any. I mean, they're going to show Uncharted. They're going to show games. But the thing is like there isn't a single first party game that I can think that's coming this fall.
Yeah, neither can I. I can't think of maybe Gran Turismo.
No,
because we would have heard something by now.
They'd announce it, but then it'd be another 2 years.
Fuck yeah! I've got nothing. I can't think of anything. Maybe they'll announce shit, but yeah, there's nothing coming out in the fall that says buy this shit now. It's all multi-platform, so.
But which is fine because they've demonstrated that multi-platform games run better on their system anyways.
One IP I'd like to see them pick back up. I know it didn't sell super well, but I love the concept. I'd love to see them bring back PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. I loved that game. Sure, it was a Smash Brothers clone, but it was fun.
I think we'll see something from Criterion.
Yeah.
Because they did that, what was it, that extreme sport motor game they showed off last year or the year before.
Yep.
They'll be back.
I don't know what we'll see this year, maybe. Not likely, but it's possible. Maybe more stuff out of Project Morpheus.
Yeah, because that's supposed to come out this year, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think it's next spring.
It's next spring.
And even that, I'm like, I can't think of anything I'm that anxious to play in VR.
Yeah.
Once again, I have this nice TV. I want to look at it.
Yeah, it was really easy for us to pick out stuff for Nintendo and like Microsoft and like individual studios, but when it came to Sony, we're just like, what? They've got nothing. But then again, they've pretty much come into the last two E3s with nothing and like stolen the show. So yeah.
I'd like to see them do more with Vita, because it's such a good platform, but nobody's doing anything with it except small indie developers and JRPG people.
I think there'll be a price cut. I think they'll match Xbox One with $350.
I'd like to see them do more with the PlayStation TV, which I think was kind of cool. But I think you can get that now for like $50.
Where?
Amazon.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the thing that lets you play Vita games on your TV.
Oh, I know what it is. I thought it was still $100, but...
Oh, yeah, I saw it at Amazon for $50 recently. Don't quote me on that, like, in the last week, but I know I've seen it in the last month or so.
Oh, yeah, I saw specials on it, like, recently, too. I just didn't know if it was still that, so...
Which, I'm really trying to think here. If there's anything that even could be ported to the Vita, that might be kind of a big deal.
Nope.
Yeah, nothing. I really can't think of anything. I would love to see... I hope they pull out something really cool, something that we don't expect.
You know what? They can.
I like
my
PlayStation 4.
I want release dates for Bastion and Geometry Wars on the Vita.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
Like that. I'm trying to think what I'd like to see ported to the Vita. I like a portable version of Mortal Kombat X, actually. That'd be fun.
Well, if they're not doing the PS3 and 360 versions, I don't think they're going to do a Vita version.
Yeah, considering it's been delayed again. It was supposed to come out on, like, Tuesday. I don't know. I really don't. Yeah, that's all I can really think of. I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the Nintendo World Championships. I hope they stream that. Which they probably will. Like,
I hope everyone. I hope everyone's just forced to play Mario Brothers 3.
I know they're using NES Remix for the Wii U and the 3DS, which it was Pat DNES Punk was talking on his podcast about it. You're gonna see the same optimal routes in everybody who makes it to the big city qualifiers. Ultimately, it's going to come down to a Dr. Mario competition at the end. Because that's the last game, and that's who you make up the most score. Like, in the original Nintendo World Championships, it came down to Tetris. Rad Racer was a little bit more random in how it assigned score and the amount of cars that were on the road that tried to kill you. But every single Mario run was basically the exact same with very little variation. With Tetris, you had to have a strategy going into it. So, I would be very curious to see what happens with that. It's kind of shitty, though, that they only did 8 Best Buy locations across America. And open it up to North America and more kind of cities. But then again, they waited so long to do it. If they announced it back in, say, February to now, and did maybe, say, like a 20-city tour, maybe. I don't see how it can be a world championship if it's only the United States.
Bust. Yay, E3 predictions. Woo!
Hey, I'm looking forward to it, though. I always get up early and watch these streams, and I'm always live tweeting or blogging during some of it. I'm not going to E3 this year again because I don't think the E3 floor would be too kind to a wheelchair or my cane. So I'd rather watch E3 from the comfort of my couch rather than the sweaty, unwashed masses. Swag is
always. That's how I do it.
Ugh. See, I like PAX because it breathes more, and the fact that it's in the winter or spring, it's not as funky. You know what I mean? You don't have that like LA heat. You've got that Boston cold. I'm okay with that.
Well, I'm tapped.
Alrighty. I had some other things that I was going to bring up, but oh well, we'll do it next week.
Oh, cool. You can.
No, it's late.
I got other stuff.
I've been recording for 3 hours, so. So yeah, anything you guys want to pimp out for the next week before we go?
I should have a couple of more boss roles coming out, which is my RPG discussion show. I interviewed Ben from Sirenscape, which is an audio program which adds sounds and soundscapes to your role-playing games. Really, really fun guy. And I also am dedicating a new show on role-playing to telling people how to get into it, and sort of the beginner's tips, since I started role-playing back in 1992 or 93. So hopefully give someone some help there. Topic show this week is on home video formats, talking everything from analog to digital to streaming services with Roebuck and maybe a special guest, depending. And the usual stuff, and we welcome a new sponsor to This Week in Geek, meowbox.com. They're like a subscription service for cats. And I love them, honestly. So, yeah, that's what I got to pimp out this week.
I myself have Off the Cuff for Geekcast Radio, which is still a thing. And I also have my new show, Geek Stuff Garage Cast, which you can find by searching in iTunes and on Stitcher. You can also find it at www.geekstuffgaragecast.com. So yeah, give us a listen, see what you think, leave some comments, feedback, whatever, what have you.
And then I'm working on stuff for the site and then various other future casts that may or may not have started being worked on. So, but other than that, that's it. So you can get a hold of us on the website, geekcastradio.com. You can contact us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at SCP21 and yours are Sirs.
Mine is at BoothNinja81.
Mine is at BirdmanDodd, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
So, as always, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks. See you next time.
E3!